Good morning to all of you. In our study, we're talking about the history and geography of the Bible. We're concluding some of our studies of the travels of Abraham, and we're going to be talking this morning regarding the travels of his son Isaac. While you have your Bibles open there, I guess it would be more helpful if I put it on the proper display. There we go. We've talked about Abraham and how that he traveled from Ur of Chaldee to Haran, which was a distance of about, how far? 600 miles. And then from Haran, he traveled how much farther down to settle in the land of Canaan in the area of Shechem? 400 miles, a total distance of 1,000 miles that Abraham has traveled from his home to come into the land that God has promised to give unto him and ultimately to his descendants. Now, in our previous several studies, we've underscored Genesis chapter 12, 1, 2, and 3, where God had made three promises unto Abram, as he was then called. What were they? Land, nation, and seed. I want you to remember those. We're going to be discussing them in the order of their fulfillment, which begins with the nation promise. When God made the promise to Abraham that he would make of him a great nation of people, we've got a problem already on the scene. What's the problem? All right, he has no children. He's old. How old is he at the time that God initially made the promise? 75. That's right. How old was he when the promised son was born? 100. All right, that's a long time to wait, isn't it? In the interim, he had another son born of Hagar. His name was Ishmael. And Ishmael was how old when Isaac was born? 14. Again, a long time to wait on the things that God had promised. Now, in our study, we've got Abraham brought down into the land of Canaan. We've got him settled in the area of Shechem. What was it that Abraham did while he was in the land of Canaan? What did he do for a living? He was a herdsman. That's right. Flocks and sheep and so forth. And so as we trace the travels of Abraham, he came down to Bethel, and then he came down into the arid area of Negeb. And then what happened when he was there? Famine, which caused him to travel to Egypt, about 200 miles. While he was in Egypt, what did he do? He lied unto Pharaoh about who Sarah was. And who did he say that she was? His sister. When Pharaoh found out about it, what did Pharaoh do? All right, gave him the boot. You can get out of Egypt. So he left Egypt and he traveled back to Bethel. And then from Bethel, he traveled down to Hebron. We've got an issue between the herdsman of Lot, who has traveled with him, and Abraham's herdsman over the number of flocks and herds, and the grazing lands and the water and so forth. So Lot makes a decision that he's going where? All right, to the well-watered plains of the Jordan, down in the area of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, we know that before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, it was obviously a well-watered plain, very attractive to Lot because of his flocks and his herds. But when Lot gets down there, we've got some problems. What happens when Lot gets down there? I didn't hear. All right, the city is full of sin. That's true. We've got homosexual practices that dominate the city. And we've got a war that begins to take place. What's prompted the war? We've got five kings from way up here in the Mesopotamian area that decide that they want more land. And so they come down into this area where they're going to war against the city-states or the kings of that area where Lot is. And what do? They took Lot. And what does Abraham do? He comes to the defense with, I believe the number was 100 and how many? 318 people. He comes down and he chases the five kings of Mesopotamia up to Dan and then on back up into this area where he rescues Lot and his family and Abraham and all of his folks, then return back over here to Bethel and on down to Hebron. And in doing that, we find that Abraham then travels over to Gerar and then travels back over to Beersheba in Genesis chapter 21, where we read about the birth of Isaac, and then Isaac is a lad, and Abraham is instructed to do what to Isaac? Offer him as a sacrifice in Genesis chapter 22 upon one of the mountains of Moriah, which I will tell thee of. We learn in Genesis chapter 22 and in verse 2. So he travels up to the area, some believe, around Jerusalem, where Mount Moriah is believed to be. And then, of course, God Abraham spares Isaac and returns back into the area of Beersheba and then travels back up to toward Hebron, where his wife Sarah dies, and then he purchases the cave of Machpelah where he buries her, and eventually then he dies and he's buried in the cave of Machpelah. Now, I want all this to be in your mind because we learn that Abraham has traveled a long, long way, 1,000 miles to get to the land of Canaan. And then I don't know how many miles, I didn't calculate that. If you want to do that, you can do that. It'd be a good project for you to see how much traveling he did while in the promised land that eventually his descendants, 400 years later, were to receive. Now, having said all of that, we begin then to talk about Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Now, in your lesson book, this is on page 48, as we talk about these characters. Page 48, and the text begins in Genesis chapter 25. You'll notice in verse 11, it says, "It came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed Isaac, his son, and Isaac dwelt by Beer Lahairoi." Is that close? Did I get it right? Almost. I'm trying. Beer Lahairoi. And so that's where we want to begin our study this morning. And, of course, the location that we are looking at is right here on the lower portion of our map. All right. Any questions or comments before we begin to discuss in some detail Isaac and the events of his life and his travels? All right, well, let's proceed just a little bit then. As you continue on into the 26th chapter, 25th and 26th chapter, we learn that Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau. Tell me about Jacob and Esau, Lynn. In the beginning stages of Jacob and Esau, of course, one is older, and God made a prophecy, and go with it. All right. All right. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So we've got several things now that we need to talk about. First of all, we need to talk about the relationship between Jacob and Esau. And you've mentioned what they were. How that Jacob was one who cared for flocks and herds, and Esau was an outdoorsman, hunter, and so forth. But this idea of the birthright, I want to talk with you just a little bit about that. What's the significance of a birthright? All right. Let's turn in our Bible to Deuteronomy chapter 21. Deuteronomy chapter 21. I have that on a chart, but I think it's down the pike just a little bit. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, look at verse 17. It says, "But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the hated, by giving him a double portion in all that he hath, for he is the beginning of his strength, the right of the firstborn is his." Just an observation there. One who was older had the rights of double portion. Now, Esau, in being so willing to sell his birthright for a bowl of stew, did not place proper importance or priority on what was to be his. He was willing to just give it away. And his attitude was, well, I'm about to die anyway, so it's of no importance to me. And so he sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. And that's not a good thing. And in doing so, of course, we want to take note of that. But going back in the text to Genesis chapter 25, Genesis chapter 25, I want us to see that these two sons, descending from them, there were two nations. Text of verse 23 of Genesis chapter 25 says, "And Jehovah said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two peoples shall be separated from thy bowels. The one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Now there's your point, Lynn, in this prophecy regarding these two boys, Jacob and Esau. Identify these two nations. That becomes something that is a point of discussion as we get over to Romans, the 11th chapter, regarding the casting off of God's people and why God chose Jacob instead of Esau. Esau I hated and Jacob I loved was the quotation representing these two nations. But let's first note that Isaac dwelt in Negev down here, and we noted that was the arid desert area, became so, of course, after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. No longer the lush, well-watered plains as Lot had recognized it, but now an arid area. And Isaac dwelt here. Jacob and Esau, of course, these twin sons. Isaac moved to Gerar because of a famine. Now, evidently, this is something that's pretty typical in this part of the country. And you'll notice where Gerar is located. There's water there. And, of course, if you are moving around a bit, you're going to need that for your flocks and herds. But he's told not to go to Egypt. That's interesting, isn't it? Abraham went to Egypt. Isaac is told not to go to Egypt. But God would continue to bless him. Look, if you will, at Genesis 26, and I want to pick up the reading beginning at verse 1. Genesis 26, verse 1. John, would you read for me, please, down through, actually, verse 4, please. All right, we want to take note just here. Once again, God renews this promise. Same promise you read in Genesis chapter 12. Same promise. Now extended to Abraham's son Isaac. Later we're going to see it extended to Isaac's son Jacob. All right? As God continues to make this promise. Later we see that Isaac moved to Rehoboth because the men of Gerar, I believe we said, grew very jealous of him. And you can read about that beginning in this 26th chapter, about halfway through the chapter. But as you continue the reading of this text, you'll note that this promise is renewed to Isaac. Now, here we have the travels of Isaac in Beer Lahai-Roi. We see that Isaac lived when his father Abraham died, Genesis 25, verse 11. He travels to Gerar, and the promise is renewed. And then we see him travel over to Rehoboth. And then further we see at Beersheba, Abimelech comes and makes a treaty with Isaac in chapter 26, just as was made with Abraham some years earlier. Now, one of you, I've forgotten exactly who, John, it was perhaps you, who asked about this man Abimelech. Is this the same Abimelech, or is this, perhaps, was it you that asked? Jenny asked that. The question, was it the same Abimelech that spoke with Abraham? What research I did on that indicated that this might be his grandfather, that this very likely was a title, not necessarily a man's name, like Pharaoh, as you had suggested in our conversation earlier. But yes, he makes a treaty with Isaac in chapter 26 in verse 28 beginning. It says, "And they said, we saw plainly that Jehovah was with thee, and we said, let there now be an oath or a covenant betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and as we have done good unto thee, nothing but good, or done unto thee nothing but good, rather, and have sent thee away in peace." Now, why was it necessary to make such a covenant, like had been done with Abraham? Well, what's going on here? We've got Abraham and his family and what's developed through his son Isaac. All right, they're getting very prosperous. And, of course, Abimelech, much like what we studied earlier with Abraham, you don't want trouble between these two powerful entities within the same land. So they agree to have peace between them, which evidently lasts for some time. And here's where we've talked about Jacob and Esau. I wanted to come back and revisit this. Esau, of course, having rejected the birthright and so forth, I want you to look at Genesis 26. Pick up the reading there at verse 34 and 35. It says, "When Esau was 40 years old, he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basmath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah." Now, we've learned some things about Esau. You mentioned, Lynn, that he became a hunter. He sold his birthright. Jacob cared for the flocks. That's right. But Esau is described as a profane man, as we see in Hebrews chapter 12. He didn't put emphasis upon the things that ought to have had emphasis. And so that's not a good thing. Jacob, on the other hand, I believe you mentioned, was preferred by his mother. And a plot was made to deceive Isaac, the father, into believing that Jacob was Esau. Jenny, you want to tell me about that episode in the lives of these two boys? Jacob, yeah, he got Esau's blessings. Esau responded how? Terry, what was Esau's response to all of this? Unfavorable. A little angry. You guys can be a little bit harder on Esau if you would like. He said in verse 41, the text says, and Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. He was so angry he wanted to kill Jacob. Yes, Bruce? All right, she told Jacob to go. And, of course, we're down here in the southern portion of our map, and she said, go to the house of Laban, my brother, in Haran. Now, we know where that is. That's up in the northern portion of our map. Terry? All right, and this was another tweak in that, too, as this lineage now goes through Jacob. Good observation. All right. Trivia question. You know, one of the things, Jenny, typically that does not happen. If you just say it in your heart, it generally doesn't just stay there. I don't know who told Rebecca. It doesn't tell us who told Rebecca. But we know that this was his plan. He was going to carry it out. Pardon me? It might have been in his face, yes. He might have verbalized that at some point to his brother. I don't know. I don't know that I would want to affirm that with any degree of confidence because I just don't know. It doesn't say that. And I would certainly deny that Rebecca had the ability to read his heart like the Lord did. But word got back to her somehow. It would be, a fair assumption to assume that Esau had verbalized that somewhere along the way and it got back to Rebecca. Juan and then Randy. Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, moms can be like that. Yeah, I suppose. Randy? Well, Jesus said something to that effect in Matthew 15, that these things come from your heart and they manifest themselves in things that we do. Seldom do things like this stay hidden. So the expressed desire is evident that Esau plans to kill him. And so much so that Jacob reacts to that when Rebecca says, go to my brother's house in Haran. And stay there until things are cooled off a bit. In chapter 28 of the text, if you'll drop down to verse 2, it says, "Arise and go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence, of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother." So Rebekah is helping Jacob to escape, to get away from Esau's anger. And of course that is a good thing. Now Jacob spent the first night in a village named Luz. We've talked about that before, the city or town called Bethel, where Abraham had been for a number of years. And God then repeated the promises that he made to Abraham and to Isaac, now here to Jacob in Genesis chapter 28. I want you to read that for me. Noah, would you mind to read that in Genesis chapter 28, verses 13 and 14 for me, please? All right, I want you to underscore these three promises. I say three promises, these three instances in which these three promises are made. They are made initially to Abraham in Genesis 12. And then they're made to Isaac where? In Genesis 26. And then to Jacob in Genesis 28. All three of them. Point of emphasis, land, nation, and seed promise repeated to all of these. And so we want to remember that as that develops into the theme of the Bible. Now, we've talked about the travels of Abraham. We've talked about the travels of Isaac. And I want you to look now at the travels of Jacob. The travels of Jacob. We see that he travels to Bethel, where this promise is repeated in Genesis 28, chapter 28, verses 10 through verse 13. And then he travels on up to Padan Aram, to Haran, where he is to take a wife his mother's family. And then we're going to note that he served Laban for 20 years. And then he returns back to the land near the land of Canaan, actually just in the Transjordan Plateau, where he meets up with Esau. And that presents quite an interesting chain of events. We'll talk about that. And then we will talk about the travels of Esau and Jacob as they separate. But let's back up just a little bit, if you will, to Genesis chapter 29. Genesis chapter 29. In Genesis chapter 29, we have the meeting of Jacob and Rebekah. Rachel, thank you. Jacob and Rachel. We know that Jacob, on his journey, comes to the well near Haran. Rachel. And when Jacob sees Rachel, what happens to him? He got all googly-eyed. That's right. Yeah. It tells us there in verse 9, it says, "While he was yet speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and that that he was Rebekah's son, rather, and she ran and told her father. Now, when you read all of that, you come away with the impression that not a whole lot has changed in a whole lot of years, has there? Laban's daughter Rachel caused Jacob to go, what was that word again, Ken? Googled, okay? And in verse 16, it says that Laban had two daughters, and the name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were tender, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days for the love that he had to her. Now, when you read verses 16 and 17 in particular, I want you to notice the expression in verse 17, Leah's eyes were tender, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. When it tells us that Leah's eyes were tender, Randy, you're reading from the New American Standard Translation, what word is used there? It says weak. What does it tell us just in the comparison of these two expressions about Leah and Rachel? Okay. Okay. I really hadn't taken it exactly like that. that perhaps is true. Maybe she just couldn't see well. I kind of took it that looking into Leah's eyes just didn't do it for him. Yeah. Thank you, Jenny. I was struggling there for a moment. In other words, she wasn't quite as pretty as Rachel was. Okay. All right. I like that. Jenny's got, I think, a pretty good spin on that. That just didn't do it for him. And Rachel made him go, what was the word, Ken? Googie-eyed. All right. So we've got a contrast between these two. Not a lot has changed, has it? And so Jacob wanted to be married to Rachel, and Leah, he just kind of wanted to be friends with her, so to speak. And so that's kind of the way that Jacob wanted that to turn out. Now, you've seen these charts before, and I think at this point in our study, it's important that we understand the relationship that begins to develop in this family. In Genesis chapter 29, Laban deceives Jacob. What does he do? Yeah. All right, things were different back then, weren't they? Yeah. Yeah, that would be quite a surprise, wouldn't it? Marriage ceremonies were a little different, and often arranged, and the way that it all panned out was just a little bit different. John, it would be quite a surprise to think that you're going to marry Julie, only to find out that you've married somebody else by mistake and by plot of Julie's father. So that would be quite a surprise. And Jacob was more than surprised. He was upset about this. But he has married Leah. Now, I want to make an observation just here. There are a lot of questions that you might ask that I don't know the answers to about the relationship between Jacob, Rachel, and Leah. But Jacob was married to Leah, and Leah was married to Jacob. And we don't see an effort on the part of either one to undo that. Now, I want you to look at that. They couldn't in the morning say, oh, we've made a mistake. There's been deceit that's taken place here. This is not right, so we'll get a divorce. Were they married? Yes. Did either of them seek to undo it? No. No, they were married. Now, just underscore that. But I want you to look while you're in Genesis 29. Look at verse 31. It says, "And Jehovah saw that Leah was hated, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, because Jehovah hath looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me. And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, because Jehovah hath heard that I am hated, he also therefore giveth me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called Levi. And she conceived again and said, or and bare a son, and said, this time will I praise Jehovah. Therefore she called his name Judah, and she left off bearing." Now there are just all kinds of lessons in this. Names meant a lot during those days. Sometimes we just go through a list of names and pick out one we like. Names had significance during these days. And these names had significance. She used the name Reuben. See, a son. Why was that distinctive? Why does she say, now my husband will love me? What's she done? That's right. That's right. Name bearer. We've got the firstborn son, and I did that. He'll love me now. Did he? No. Go ahead, Lynn. Oh, no. No, he didn't ignore her. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't ignore her. We'll talk some about that. Pardon me? He loved her less. Yes, I think is the key here. This word hated, I think, needs to be seen in the term that is used. God has seen my affliction. She did not get what she desired. She wanted him to be goo-goo-eyed, as Ken said. And he just wasn't. He just wasn't. He didn't love her like that. And, of course, the term hated here carries some pretty heavy connotations. And I think you can see that her heart is broken because the marriage to her was not what marriage was to be. And she knew it. And it hurt her. No. But she, as it were, dedicated this child to God. That's right. You see, in the process of this, you've got, as you indicated, a number of years that are passing, at least four, and we're going to see that eventually there were other children involved in this interesting family arrangement, and their names became significant. As well. But she's never going to get what she thought that she wanted or what she did want. Because God has looked upon my affliction, a son. Simeon means hearing, because Jehovah hath heard that I am hated. Levi, the word means attachment. She said, now this time my son will be joined to me. And then Judah, that is praise. This time I will praise Jehovah. That's as good as it's going to get. At least that's what she anticipated. Now, Leah eventually has three more children a bit later. Issachar, that is a man of hire. God hath given me my hire, You want to tell me the story about how come Issachar to be born? Mandrakes, yeah. Reuben's mandrakes. And what was it that Rachel wanted? I'm glad you said that. That's right. So I wouldn't have to say it, yeah. Didn't work out very well. But at any rate, Leah conceived. Now what happened was Rachel said, you can have Jacob tonight if I can have Reuben's mandrakes. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, later Zebulun was born. His name means exalted. She said, now my husband will dwell with me. That's an interesting word, especially in this context, as it means to give honor or to exalt. And then, of course, the last child that she had, Dinah, judgment or justice, sad story there we'll talk about in just a little bit. Was raped by the by Shechem, the son of Hamor, and there was vengeance that was taken upon the city of Shechem because of this. But when you look at the term Zebulun, exalted, he'll dwell or give honor to me. It's just an interesting tweak on how things transpire in this family. Jacob desired Rachel. Rachel couldn't have children. Leah began to have a lot of children. She desired the love of her husband, and she couldn't have it. Rachel had the love of her husband, but she wanted children, and she couldn't have children. And eventually, Joseph was born. And what does Joseph's name mean? Now, that's a trivia question. You need to know that. What does Joseph's name mean? Another son. I tell you, I don't think I have it up there. I don't have it up there. Another son. Now, strangely enough, when she had a son, she was not content. When you look through the process of the names, the progression of the names that Leah gave to her sons, you see her learning contentment. When you see the first son that Rachel had, she wants another son. She's not content. The very name that she gave indicates the desire for another son. Now, when Joseph was finally born, or I should say rather, before Joseph was born, in chapter 30, Rachel has become so upset that she blames him. She says, give me a son or I die. Well, eventually Joseph was born. She's still not content, though she's had a son. Eventually she has another son. And what does she name him? Pardon me? No. Benoah. Rachel named him Benoah. And what does that mean? Son of my sorrow. What happened to Rachel when Benoah was born? She died. But she named him son of my sorrow. Now, Jacob renamed him. What was he then called? Benjamin. What does that mean? Son of the right hand. That's right. All right. So here's a name of honor that's given unto Benjamin, because during the process of all of this, what's happened to Joseph?
Oh, yes, good old Joseph, back a long time ago. He went to make a visit in Egypt, all right? Things not good, and we'll talk about that some more as we get a little bit further down in our study. But I want to just throw that out. All right, hold that thought, Bruce. It is amazing, yes. There's a thought I want to tie in with this and the names and so forth. You recall that Leah had learned contentment with the naming of the last son that she had, Zebulun. Now will my husband dwell with or honor me? Trivia question. Who died first, Rachel or Leah? Rachel did. Where was Rachel buried? To the side of the road on the way to Bethlehem, the place. And where was Leah buried? The cave of Machpelah. Tell me again about the cave of Machpelah. That's where the fathers. Family cemetery. Now, when Leah named Zebulun, did she get what she finally wanted? She did. Never did get Jacob's love, but she did get his respect for her. Okay? All right? I'm not, no. 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 I might have led to that confusion. I didn't say anything about the mothers of some of these other children, too. Zebulun, Issachar, and so forth. The list, I want you to look at the list over in Genesis chapter 35, beginning about verse 23. Sons Leah, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, the sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin, the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan, and Naphtali, we didn't talk about them, the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad, and Asher, we didn't talk about them, but we do want to mention all of these and get them before us. No, not necessarily. All this place, but I think that it is noteworthy that about 22 years, I believe, passed from the time that Joseph went to Egypt until the time that he's reunited with his family, which tells us that Benjamin was, what, probably 2? There, I mean, he was just a little bit time all of that happened, so as far as what happened, as far as Joseph's knowledge of Benjamin is concerned, he had to inquire. He missed that. Brother Benjamin. Any questions or comments? Yes, Donna, and then. That's correct. Verse 18. Yes. It came to pass as her soul was departed, dying, called his name for Noah. His father called him. Died buried away Ephrath, the same death. Okay. There's another point I want to pick up out of this chapter that is important to us. This is kind of a side note that you might find interesting. But the point I wanted to pick up in the 35th chapter is that God changed Jacob's name to Israel. That's right. Now, when you read of these 12 sons identified beginning in verse 23, the son
tribes of Israel, as we use that expression, and that's why we call them the 12 tribes of Israel instead of the 12 tribes of Jacob. I'm done. Well, that's not good. We'll start there next time, then, I guess, and talk about his exit from Laban's area in Haran.